Peace be upon you. So I was conflicted if I should do this episode because I want to talk about hadith and women. And it's very disturbing reading these hadith. But the reality is we have 1.7 billion Sunni Muslims out there. And they believe that this hadith is a source of law, that these are religious decrees that were narrated by the Prophet. And this is a complete fabrication. Hadith as a whole has no foundation in the religion. And I want to highlight these hadith that are particularly disparaging towards women. And these are only from Sahih sources, predominantly Bukhari and Muslim. And these narrations, they insult the Prophet, the religion, and hopefully, God willing, can serve as an eye-opener to why the entire hadith corpus needs to be discarded as a source of religious law. This is because if these blatant, flagrant lies about the Prophet went through the most rigorous method of scrutinization and were still graded as sahih, then this means that the entire hadith corpus, the entire hadith sciences are unreliable. Others make a compromise. They say, well, look, we'll discard these ones that don't sit well with us and we'll accept the ones that, you know, sound nice. The irony is, if the filter system allows in sewage, you would never drink that water. It's not like you would just say, okay, well, let's just take the sewage out. We should discard the entire corpus because, again, the Quran condemns any hadith beside God and his revelations. And the hadith are not wahi from God. These are false fabrications attributed to the Prophet hundreds of years after his death. And we can demonstrate this. You know, the function of the Prophet, of the delivery of the Quran, was for strict monotheism, the absolute devotion and worship of God alone. But yet we have this hadith. This is from Abi Dawood, 2140, narrated by Qais ibn Sa'ad. I went to Al-Hira, which is south of Kufa in south central Iraq, and saw them, the people, prostrating themselves before a governor of theirs. So I said, the messenger of Allah has more right to have prostration made before him. When I came to the Prophet, I said, I went to Al-Hira and saw them prostrating themselves before a governor of theirs. But you have most right, Messenger of Allah, to have people prostrating themselves before you. He said, tell me, if you were to pass my grave, would you prostrate yourself before it? I said, no. He then said, do not do so. If I were to command anyone to make prostration before another, I would have commanded women to prostrate themselves before their husbands because of the special right over them given to husbands by Allah. Just wow. There's so much wrong with this. One, this dude is talking about prostrating before the Prophet. And the Prophet is not saying, hey, that is idol worship. Don't you dare do that. It just subtly says, oh yeah, don't do that. Don't do so. Secondly, the Prophet is attributed in making the statement, if I were to command anyone to make prostration before another, I would have commanded women to prostrate themselves before their husbands. To think that the Prophet would have contemplated such things is absolutely grotesque and goes completely against the foundation of the Quran. That the only one we're supposed to prostrate to, the only one we're supposed to worship is God alone. To think that the Prophet was contemplating such things would be such an insult to his character, to his morality. Hadith like this just showed the unreliability of hadith sciences. If this made its way through and got included in one of the revered books of hadith, again, how less reliable are all the other narrations? Now, God willing, let's look at the next hadith where the Prophet supposedly claims that he looked into hell and saw that the majority of its inhabitants were women. This is read from Bukhari 29, but you'll find it also in Muslim and in other compilations. It reads, the Prophet said, I was shown the hellfire, and the majority of its dwellers were women who were ungrateful. It was asked, do they believe in Allah? Or are they ungrateful to Allah? He replied, they are ungrateful to their husbands and are ungrateful for the favors and the good charitable deeds done to them. If you have always been good, benevolent to one of them, and then she sees something in you, not of her liking, she will say, I have never received any good from you. So there you have it, guys. According to Bukhari and Muslim and the Hadith compilers, the majority of those in hell are women, and the reason they're in hell is because they're ungrateful for their husbands. Now, I'm seeing a theme in these two Hadith that it's constantly people just being upset that their wives are not happy with them and that they're ungrateful. And it seems like they're just creating narrations attributing it to the prophet to win an argument with their wives. Now, if this was true, that the majority of the inhabitants in hell were women specifically because they were ungrateful of their husbands, why do we not see this written in the Quran? Why is it not specified that, hey, women, look, you have this terrible destiny ahead of you. Unless you become appreciative of your husbands and what they spend upon you, you're going to go to hell. No, instead, what we see is that the majority of people in hell, according to the Quran, are idol worshippers, are disbelievers, or people who are unappreciative of God. So if we're supposed to say that, no, that ideology is wrong, we need to completely restructure our theology in order to address this fact that the majority of people end up in hell, not because of those reasons, not because of the relationship with God, but specifically the women's relationship with their husbands. So again, from these two hadith, we're seeing a theme that it seems like, again, someone's having a fallout with their wife and are trying to find justification, narrations attributed to the prophet to strengthen their argument. Now it gets worse. In the next hadith, this is Bukhari 304, you can also find it in Sahih Muslim, it gives more clarity to this hadith in case there was any doubt regarding what the Prophet meant by this hadith. It reads, once Allah's Messenger went out to the Musalla to offer prayer. Then he passed by the women and said, O women, give alms, as I have seen that the majority of dwellers of hell were you, women. They asked, why is it so, O Allah's Messenger? He replied, you curse frequently and are ungrateful of your husbands. I have not seen anyone more deficient in intelligence and religion than you. A cautious, sensible man could be led astray by some of you. The women asked, O Allah's Messenger, what is deficient in our intelligence and religion? He said, is not the evidence of two women equal to the witness of one man? They replied in the affirmative. He said, this is the deficiency in her intelligence. Isn't it true that a woman can neither pray nor fast during her menses? The women replied in the affirmative. He said, this is the deficiency in her religion. So this hadith eliminates any doubt that they want to attribute the prophet as completely condemning of women, that they're deficient in intelligence, and that the religion proves that they're deficient in also their deen. And he's giving tafsir to justify these stances. Then it's doubling down with this falsehood that women cannot pray nor fast during their menses. Please show me the verse where it states that women cannot fast or pray during their menses. Now, if they're ill, that's a separate story. But because they have their menses, this does not exist in the Quran. This is a fabrication, just like the rest of this hadith. And it's from garbage like this that people justify these terrible treatment towards women to make them into second-class citizens. And what they're doing when they do this is they're disenfranchising half the population. They're treating them like garbage, and now they feel self-righteous in that decision. And in another hadith, this is a Sahih Bukhari 5184, and it claims that the Messenger of Allah said, the woman is like a rib. If you try to straighten her, she will break. So if you want to get benefit from her, do so while she still has some crookedness. So this is insinuating that the women are naturally crooked. And you think about it, the whole function of the religion is mustaqim, to be on the straight path. But apparently women are incapable of being straight, that they're naturally crooked. And this referencing of women as naturally crooked is saying that they're naturally disbelievers. And we see this in the Quran, Surah 14, verse 2 and 3. It says, God, the one who possesses everything in the heavens and everything on earth, woe to the disbelievers. They have incurred a terrible retribution. They are the ones who give priority to this life over the hereafter, repel from the way of God, and seek to make it crooked. They have gone far astray. Now, when they're saying that the women are crooked, that you can't straighten them up, in essence, they're saying that they are naturally disbelievers. So let's consider what's more likely, that women as a whole are naturally disbelievers that are going to hell, or these fabricators who created these false narrations and attributed them to the prophet are the ones who are crooked, that they are the ones who are repelling from the way of God, and they are the ones who are going to be in the bottom pit of hell on the day of resurrection. Now, so far, these have been relatively mild compared to the next set of hadith that we're going to be getting into. Now, if that upset you, you might not want to listen on. But if you want to continue hearing what kind of foul, disgusting narrations are being attributed to God's messenger, continue listening. You know, God willing, if you do continue listening, hopefully, God willing, this opens your eyes. If you have any question regarding the validity of hadith, once you hear these narrations, hopefully you'll be so repulsed by the hadith that you'll turn wholeheartedly to God alone, that you'll turn wholeheartedly to the Quran alone. Now, this next narration, it comes from Sahih Bukhari 6968. And it has to do with the concept of consent in marriage, and it's dropping this morsel regarding tricking someone into marriage. It reads, narrated by Abu Huraira, the Prophet said, a virgin should not be married till she is asked for her consent, and the matron should not be married till she is asked whether she agrees to marry or not. It was asked, O Allah's Apostle, how will she, the virgin, express her consent? He said, by keeping silent. So here, we're going to stop at this point, right? He's saying that the consent of the virgin is her silence. This is not consent. If someone takes someone else in marriage and basically forcing themselves upon them, that's called rape. That is not consent. Consent means when you have an adult who is eligible to make consent. Consenting is not silence. But here's the reason that they want to say that consent is silence, is because they have this understanding in hadith that if the Prophet does not object to something, then therefore it's permissible. So let's continue reading this hadith. It says, some people said that if a virgin is not asked for her consent and she is not married, and then a man, by playing a trick, presents two false witnesses that he has married her with her consent, and the judge confirms his marriage as a true one, and the husband knows that the witnesses were false ones, then there is no harm for him to consummate his marriage with her, and the marriage is regarded as valid. So he's saying he can falsely go and take a virgin, bring two false witnesses saying, yes, they got married. The judge authorizes it. They find out that the whole thing is a sham, yet his marriage is still valid. Now, why would they include this inside the hadith? It's because they believe silence is consent. The fact that the Prophet did not object to this means that, yes, it's permissible. Someone can trick a virgin into marriage and do an entire sham, and she has no say in the matter. And according to them, it is permissible because the Prophet did not object to this saying. Look at the deceitful scam that they're running with these hadith. They're able to pass all kinds of heinous acts and laws and say that it's justified, that the Prophet signed off on this. What despicable people. There is no shame in individuals who fabricate these hadith, propagate them as if they're authentic. Then it becomes law among the land of the Muslims. This is absolutely absurd. The entire corpus needs to be thrown out. It's utter garbage. It's disparaging to God, His religion, His Prophet. These people who claim to love the Prophet are the first to use his name for such grotesque laws as these to justify their tyranny. And I warned you, it's going to get worse. What about this concept of sex slaves? So when October 7th happened, people were denying the fact that the Muslims were taking sex slaves, but it's in their hadith corpus. They believe that this is permissible. So this is Sahih Bukhari 2542. Narrated by Ibn Muhayriz, I saw Abu Sayyid and asked him about coitus interruptus. And I'm sorry to get graphic here, but this is the method of contraception of pulling out. Abu Sayyid said, we went with Allah's Apostle in the Ghaza of Bani al-Mustalik, and we captured some of the Arab women as captives. And the long separation from our wives was pressing us hard, and we wanted to practice coitus interruptus. We asked Allah's Messenger whether it was permissible. He said, it is better for you not to do so. No soul, that which Allah has destined to exist up to the day of resurrection, but will definitely come into existence. So in this hadith, he doesn't condemn the act. He doesn't condemn the fact that they're having this coitus interruptus. He doesn't condemn the fact that they're taking sex slaves. What he's condemning is the fact that they're pulling out. He's saying, in essence, finish the job. This is absolutely heinous. to attribute such lies to God's messenger, to say that he gave authority for them to take sex slaves and to do what they want with them. This is so horrendous on so many levels. God tells us that aggression is only permitted against the aggressors, that oppression is worse than murder, that the sexual relations one can have is only with their spouses. To attribute these lies to the prophet and say that he gave the green light on such heinous, disgusting acts, that this was considered, you know, lawful, is absolutely horrendous. And to think, again, these are in their most revered books. They considered Bukhari and Muslim as considered the most authentic books second to the Quran, that they attribute these lies to the prophet. There should be a book burning. They should grab all these hadith, put them in a giant pile and burn them, just like they did at the time of Umar. So let's continue. In Bukhari 3237, again narrated by Abu Huraira, it reads, Allah's messenger said, if a husband calls his wife to his bed to have sexual relation and she refuses and causes him to sleep in anger, the angels will curse her till morning. Think about how much oppression this has led to people who are forced into marriages, maybe even tricked into marriage. Now they have to be sexual objects for their husbands for the rest of their lives. That any time they want any action, they have to submit. And if they don't, they're going to be going to hell. Look at the kind of fabricated religion that these monsters created. And you hear this nonsense from traditionalists saying, oh yeah, we honor the women. We honor our women. We care for them. Read your garbage. This is the hadith. This is your secondary source of law that you uphold, that you think that this is wahi from God. It's absolutely despicable. And I apologize for my venting. I read this. It just makes my blood boil. And I wish I could read this calm and collected and just tell you the facts, but it's like, it's impossible to read this stuff and to think that they're attributing this, these lies to God and his religion, to his prophet. And they're calling this, the supposed ulama, the scholars are telling the world that this is God's religion, this filth, this horrendous material. Now there's many narrations I don't even want to read. It's too gross. It's too disturbing. I don't even want it coming out of my mouth. It was hard enough reading this other stuff. But I'm going to end with one last one. This one is so gross, so disturbing. But hey, it's Sahih Muslim 1453. And for background, the individual in this narration, Salem, is the adopted son of Suhail. So let's read. I heard Salama, the wife of Allah's apostle, saying to Aisha, by Allah, I do not like to be seen by a young boy who has passed the period of fosterage. Whereupon she, Aisha, said, why is it so? Salla, daughter of Suhail, came to Allah's messenger and said, Allah's messenger, I swear by Allah, I see in the face of Abu Hudayfa, her husband, the signs of disgust on account of entering of Salem in the house. And again, Salem is their adopted son. Whereupon Allah's messenger said, suckle him. She said, he has a beard. But he again said, suckle him. And it would remove what is their expression of disgust on the face of Abu Hudayfa. She said, I did that. And by Allah, I did not see any sign of disgust on the face of Abu Hudayfa. So here she has an adopted son who is beyond the age of puberty. And her husband is disturbed when she's in the room with him alone. So God's messenger, according to this narration, is commanding that she breastfeed her adult son who apparently has a beard. And when she objects, he presses the issue saying, yes, suckle him and it's going to remove it. And then when apparently she does the act, she says, yes, this worked. It removed the disgust from the face of Abu Hudayfa. What nonsense! What absolute nonsense to think that a grown man sucking on the teat of a woman is automatically going to make them, in essence, bonded, that the husband is no longer going to feel jealousy. What absurdities. Like, I've never come across a Muslim who you share this with and doesn't realize just the absurdity of this entire narration. And again, this is considered sahih. It's considered authentic. It went through all the hadith sciences and they determined that yes, this is true, this actually happened. What absolute disgusting attributions to give to God's messenger, to think that he would promote such sexual deviancy. And the sad thing is, again, how many people are acting upon these disgusting hadith that they think that these are religious laws decreed by the Prophet, authorized by God. God tells us in the Quran that the worst creatures are those who fabricate lies and attribute them to God. When they claim that the Prophet is God's mouthpiece, that anything he says is divine decree, and they're attributing these falsehoods to the Prophet, they're ultimately attributing falsehood to God. These hadith have no foundation in the religion. They're utter fabrications. They're concocted by the devil himself, inspired into man to be spread, to be held up as a source beside God's revelations. And as we saw in previous episodes, oftentimes they'll take the hadith over the verses of God and the Quran. This shows that they do not believe in God. They do not believe in God's messenger. They're doing the most horrendous thing, yet they think that they are righteous. In Surah 35, verse 8, it says, "Note the one whose evil work is adorned in his eyes until he thinks that it is righteous. God thus sends astray whoever wills to go astray, and he guides whoever wills to be guided. Therefore, do not grieve over them. God is fully aware of everything they do."